Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 245, being recorded on the 5th of September, 2018, with special guests Doug Strother and John Miller. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Cynthia, Kendall, and of course our special guests, and we're going to get to them in just a minute. But before that, let's just talk about some of the updates in the Azure space. I know, Kale, you put some links in there. Anything you want to start with?
Sure, I got a couple of them. The first one is, and I hope I pronounce this right, it's one of our partners called Avery. Has a new product in Azure called VFXT, which is of interest to anyone who's running high-performance computing workloads. Specifically, this release, this product that they're releasing in Azure, is not just for doing high-performance compute in the cloud, but also allows a lot of connectivity to on-premises, so the lift and shift type stuff, and bringing some of the workloads that you had at the edge or maybe even on-premises to be able to burst into Azure. It's a pretty cool little offering that this company has out there. They've got a lot of information up here about, you know, core counts and what all capabilities the product can do. It's in public preview right now, which basically means there's no cost to this other than the infrastructure, you know, the compute nodes and stuff to run it. So you don't even really have to pay, you know, to use the solution. And you can come up here, take a look. It's in, like I said, public preview in Azure Marketplace. Got a nice little dashboard to help show, you know, all the telemetry coming out of the system for your high-performance workload. A couple other ones. One was on transparent data encryption. Since Evan's not here, I'll take his. This data encryption and a whole was got a lot of footprint in blockchain. We have to mention blockchain on every one of these Azure podcasts. So in this case, we're basically talking about traditional SQL database, though, and the difference between transparent data encryption and always encrypted. There's a lot of similarities there, and people might get confused about which one to use where. So there's a super awesome write-up here with a nice little grid to kind of talk through what are some of the restrictions, capabilities of these two different types of technology, and when they could be applied to help you make best choice there. One other one I had that I wanted to mention was the Azure Source. We always mention from Rob Caron. Great kind of, you know, consolidated roll-up of all the things that are on GA, the Azure Fridays, the Azure Podcast is in there, and a bunch of different kind of nice little nuggets about different things that are going on with the deep learning, the sketch-to-code stuff we talked about before. So there's a lot of, that's a whole treasure trove of information, so you should check that out when you have a second.
Yeah, I love his updates every week. It's now, if you have the time to read it, that's what you would read. If you have the time to listen to, you listen to this show. That's the way I like to put it. The couple of things that I caught my eye, of course, you know, I'm big on Key Vault, and these days virtual network service endpoints is now generally available for Key Vault. So what this means is that if you want to use Key Vault and you're worried about the fact that Key Vault is potentially exposed to the internet, you can lock it down to a particular virtual network by using the virtual network service endpoints facility, which has been slowly rolling out to other Azure services. And also a couple of other updates. The G-Series VMs are now available for Azure HD Insight. So if you use Azure HD, obviously the G-Series give you all that extreme compute power that we talked about earlier, and you could use that in your Hadoop jobs as you so fit. What else? Anything else you guys want to talk about? Cynthia, Kendall, anything that you guys feel worth mentioning this week?
Yeah, so I have a quick one. So if you did read Azure Source, or if that is something that you have
I read before, one of the big announcements is that Azure IoT Hub is now fully integrated with EventGrid. So this is just a really cool call out and the way that we can now process this data from all these different endpoints and data sources. So definitely recommend checking out that Azure source, as it really is the most comprehensive, in my opinion, guide to kind of all of the major updates and things coming GA each week.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, and EventGrid is one of those topics that I don't know, we probably touched upon briefly in a previous episode. I feel like we need to dig into that because that keeps coming up in a number of updates. Okay, I think that's a good roundup. Why don't we now turn the mic over to our special guests, and I'll let, Doug, why don't you introduce yourself first and then let John go after you.
Thank you very much. My name is Doug Strother. I've been with Microsoft for about 10 years as a senior premier field engineer specializing in platforms. And we're seeing obviously evolution in all of our technology, and that will also include evolving our skills and our people. So I'd just like to talk about what I'm doing as a systems engineer, what I've been doing to stay relevant, to transfer my skills and my work assignments to cloud-based workloads, and to a great extent, open-source technologies as well.
That's cool. Thank you. Go ahead, John.
Thanks, Ajit. Hi, I'm John Miller. I've been an applications development consultant for 16 years. The last seven have been with Microsoft Consulting, with a real focus on DevOps. And so I kind of wanted to focus where certifications were landing in the development world and how they're meaningful both kind of in the consulting world for transactional workers as well as for people who are more long-term IT folks.
That's great, yeah. And, you know, this topic of certifications of in Azure or training in Azure, this is a constant battle for all of us, right? Because the technology is changing so quickly. Everybody, at least, you want to have some level set in terms of what you know in the platform. And a lot of companies are looking for something to latch onto to say, hey, okay, you know, does this person really have the right amount of knowledge? And one way to do that is through certifications. Can either of you guys speak to maybe some of the history of these certifications and how they have kind of evolved over time? And John, you want to try that, or Doug, anyone?
Please go ahead, John, and I'll add.
Sure. So, I mean, like I said, I've been in consulting for a long time now, and a lot of times, at least in the consulting world, your gigs are kind of short-term. You're going to have to prove expertise, hit the ground running again and again and again and again. And so in a lot of cases there, the certification is kind of seen as the entry-level training. A lot of it is kind of book work that you're doing. You may not have as much hands-on experience with the technology. Compared to kind of the other side of the pendulum here, where maybe people are working on long-term projects or they're focused on just one part of the IT infrastructure, and they know that part forward and backwards, inside and out, because they're maintaining it day in and day out. And maybe the certification is a chance for them to broaden their expertise beyond kind of what they're working on in the 9-to-5. So for a long time, these had been seen, and in a lot of cases were, you know, multiple choice or kind of fill-in-the-blank tests that provided a progression to prove your technical expertise. And that was good enough for the time. And I think what we're seeing now is really a lot more depth in kind of the testing and training industries, where we have more bite-sized classes, more self-paced edX, Coursera classes, more live or web-streamed instructor-led courses. So we're kind of seeing a one-size-fits-all certification kind of break up kind of across the employment spectrum. Doug, would you say you're kind of seeing the same thing in the infrastructure side?
I definitely would agree. We're seeing, just call it right out, Linux coming up in a big way, largely due to cloud technologies and cloud providers, including Azure. And the MCSE of old has a very clear path, a mirrored path in the Linux technologies that they should be studying now, learning. One of the other things, and this starts with TechNet and Microsoft.com/learning, most of these resources today are free or nearly free, or if you have the money, you can get into it, you know, with instructor-led training or something more in-depth. But for all of these technologies and all of this transition, the learning is available to you. Whether you're, you know, just a citizen, you can go to TechNet, get into a free cloud training class, and they'll even give you a free Azure account to do the labs with. If you go to linuxfoundation.org, they've got numerous certifications that pretty much mirror the Microsoft certification program, but it'll teach you about also software-based networking and you know, kind of the other side of the non-Microsoft side of the equation. And it'll position you well for open source technologies that are up and coming and integrating those open source technologies with Microsoft technologies.
Yeah, I think one of the things is, Cale, one of the things in the past, I've taken a lot of certifications over the years from Microsoft, and one of the things that people used to ask a lot is like how to prep for these things best. You mentioned a lot there, Doug, I think it was Doug, about the different ways that you can kind of study here, whether it be Pluralsight or edX, some of these external things, or even on-prem stuff like Microsoft Ignite's coming up soon, and there's always areas there that are focused on exam prep, as well as, like, you know, there's obviously books and all kinds of things that you can get into as well there. But I think the biggest thing, I'm interested in you guys' feedback. I mean, the biggest thing for me over the years has always been, you know, review, like, what the test agenda is, kind of thing, like what you're going to kind of be measured on. You know, make sure that you've got some experience in it, not just, you know, you know what the term means, but actually have gone and touched it. But I'm interested in your guys, how you approach that question when someone says, hey, I'm ready to take exam XYZ. What should I do?
I think you hit step one right on the nail. You go to the website, you look at the objectives that are being covered, and you make sure you at least read the Azure documentation on it once. Again, I know a lot of people are maybe doing this day-to-day and know what they do day-to-day. On every certification exam, no matter how much or how little I may have studied for it, I've always ended up learning something. And so I think the first thing is just reading through all that. Again, if you're doing this all day, that might be enough just to brush up on the book work. If you're not necessarily as familiar with all the resources, I think, to your point and to Doug's point, important to get hands-on experience, and so cheap and accessible to get test accounts or to watch videos or to go to GitHub and get your hands on some sample code. So many options to build that experience if you don't have it.
Yes, 100%. I don't think we've ever had these many options. Multimedia, audio, hands-on labs, books, ebooks, you know, YouTube. It has Microsoft and other people just explaining it, you know, and giving it away. So by blending a lot of these tools, you know, you can only read so much, you can only watch so much video. You have a lot at your disposal to keep it interesting and keep it moving. Let's not forget about practice exams that come from places like MeasureUp. excuse me one second. You want to pick it up, Jim?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with taking the pretests on MeasureUp. I like to do that early in my test process just so I can see kind of what areas I already know and I don't need to work on so much and what might be more interesting to focus my studies on. But with these, especially the Azure certifications, they're changing so fast that I tend not to place my hope in those pretests just because it's really hard to keep up with the questions that they're adding. It seems like they've got new ones every week.
Yeah, the best resource ultimately for the Azure exams, I'm a cloud infrastructure MCSC, you know, took the appropriate test to get that way. But I learned more from going to azure.microsoft.com and systematically working my way through every word of it. because it's cutting edge, and even a few weeks and certainly a few months, there could be a significant change. How that translates into an exam is one thing, but it does, support your point. This is a very dynamic place, and it's dynamic subject matter. So you really want to stick to it. One other thing, I saw this morning, they're now offering 2 free retests to the average consumer. So you basically register for an exam and you're getting 3 tries. And I would suggest using one of those tries as a learning opportunity as well. Not to steal the questions off the test, because all the tests are going to be different, but to get away from the fear of failing the exam, because you know you get the free retries. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the other thing too that comes back to me a lot when we were taking these is, like, there's a lot of, you know, each one of the services inside Azure is, and there's many of them, has many, many options, right? So a lot of times you get focused on a specific service or something or a specific area that you're working on, and you say, oh, I know that thing cold. I know it totally cold. And then you go take the test and you're like, what the heck was that question about? Like, I've never even seen that feature. And so it's important, I think, especially in the areas that you're focused on and your specific test you're going after, is to say, I need to go learn about all the options around this thing. Like, what are all the different things that this thing can do, the different settings for it? Because you're going to be quizzed on all that stuff. It's not just about, like, the basic functionality. It's about kind of the nitty-gritty stuff, too.
So how much of it is memorization versus understanding? What's the balance here we're talking about with these tests?
Well, for 533, which is the CLAD exam, I would say, you know, you're looking at a third hands-on, a third book, if you will, and then immersing yourself in the Azure website again. I took the test once, didn't pass it, took that tact of just consuming and trying to master the material and the headers and relate that to the exam objectives. I went in and I passed. So, you know, I really think that you use your traditional resources, but my star page is azure.microsoft.com, and on my other one, it's TechNet. I don't open up to a portal, and that's, you know, you really just have to immerse yourself in the material.
Yeah, I would agree for the development ones. I took a similar approach. I walked through the outline. Anything I didn't have experience with, I went to GitHub. The Azure Readiness account has incredible hands-on labs, and so I would just kind of walk through the hands-on labs. While I would probably agree with the breakdown of memorization versus book knowledge versus hands-on, what I found a lot in the developer exams is the more hands-on experience you get, those memorization things kind of get drilled into you, like the authentication flows for Office 365 or other things. Once you've done them, dozens and dozens of times, it feels like memorization just because you've memorized it. You've gone through it so many times. And I think that was something that really jumped out at me on the exams. The things that I've done at work every day came right through on those questions. And to Cale's point, some features I had never even heard of, and so you've got to kind of lean on your experience for the ones you do know to prepare for those ones that come out of left field.
So, John, I know you mentioned DevOps. So I have a question for you. Are there any DevOps certification that's currently available?
I'd have to look. I believe they finally retired the old TFS certifications, so I do not believe we currently have a certification offering there.
Because I remember hearing about one a while ago that it's in preview / they are thinking / developing it, but heard much after that. So just curious if you had any insights on that.
I don't have any insights on that. I'll tell you, one of the things that I am seeing that's kind of a different twist on the certifications is the Xamarin University approach. So this is another Microsoft product for cross-platform app development. And those courses really require focused, I won't say in class because it's all, delivered over the web, but, focused group development time together. And it's interesting to kind of compare that with the certifications where as long as you can carve out the 2 or 3 hours to take the test, you can really prepare for certifications however you want, you know, listening to podcasts, working on demos through the portal, reading the documentation. But for something like Xamarin U or some of these professional development classes, you're completing coursework with, you know, a cohort. And so I think some level of that would probably be great for a DevOps approach to kind of learn best practices from other practitioners.
Yeah, so John, I actually have a couple of questions for you as well, just speaking about some of the exams that are in preview or things that are becoming available. So I didn't know if you had any insight on exams that are in beta. I know, for example, there's a Cosmos DB exam that's currently in beta, and so I was just kind of curious what the approach might be for someone who's interested in taking one of those where there's very little preparation material out there, and then also if you had any insight into some of the new Azure tracks that they are building out, because I understand they're trying to differentiate the different exams, so what that might look like, and just seeing if you had any feedback there.
Sure. So, yeah, the beta exams are, you know, if you're going to be taking the exams anyway, it's a great way to do it. I think, and a lot of times you can get free vouchers and things like that if you're not getting them, you know, from Microsoft or a partner. So that's a great benefit. In a lot of ways, the studying is similar. You just go through the outlined objectives. Here you're going to be relying a lot more on the Azure.com documentation because there won't be a lot of videos or formal training or official courseware or anything like that yet.
Do those exams go, is it kind of like they go through a beta process and then they evolve the exam based on the way that people are doing on it, or is it strictly just this is going to be the exam they release, they just haven't fully fleshed it out yet? Like what does beta really mean, and how does it translate into what it will become?
That's a great question, and there's kind of two main differences between a beta exam and the final exams. So the beta exam will be a little bit longer, and the reason there is that they still don't know the final set of questions, and so they're going to review how people score on every question and decide if maybe some questions were too easy or too hard or not relevant to the outline or things like that. So you got to be prepared to answer a couple more questions, or you know, have a little more tolerance for questions that maybe don't fit. And as a beta tester, you have the opportunity to give feedback for questions that you felt really didn't make the cut. The second piece is, since they are scoring kind of every question on a curve, you don't get your test scores for the beta exam until all of the beta test scores have been analyzed. So you need to be patient after taking the exam for what could be several months until you finally get your beta results. Big difference from the normal certification exam where you've got to wait, you know, an extra 10 seconds at the end of the exam to get your grade back.
So just in terms of, you know, if somebody is to get started with Azure certifications, I know there's the 70534, which is the solution architecture for Azure certification, and there's 533 and 532, I believe, right? The development and the more infrastructure-based certifications. Are those still the kind of the core courses, the core certifications that we have in Azure, or did any of that change?
Yeah, 533 for your infrastructure resource is the way to go. You would take that out of a 2012 or 2016 server MCSA, but I'm pretty sure that 533 is it. Internally and elsewhere, I think they are developing, John, correct? I mean, they've got in beta, I believe we've got I don't know if they hyphenate them with an A, but almost see similar exams, but the next revision. So I'm not deeply familiar with the beta exams, but I'm wondering if any of those are popping up now. Is there a successor to 7533 in beta?
I think the development one has not yet been released. I think, like you said, the infrastructure one was just released, and 535 might have been out a smidge longer. But yeah, those are all going through their releases, and it's really amazing with Azure. Every time they refresh this, so much has changed since, you know, the last 2 year cycle. So interesting, you know, incentive there to stay up on it, just because if you fall 2 or 3 cycles behind, that study is going to be a bigger mountain to climb.
So what kind of roles would you recommend go after the 533, for example? Let's start with that one. Should everyone do that because that's like, you know, base level infrastructure, or do we say, okay, you know, if you're in this particular role, if you're a developer, for example, would you do 533?
I wouldn't push on it. I think, you know, I do a lot of work with dev test labs and DevOps, so I end up doing a lot of the programmable infrastructure, so it was interesting to me. But no, I don't think necessarily every dev on your dev team would need to be going through 533 or even certification in general. I think it's really a chance for individuals to either differentiate themselves from, you know, from what their team is doing, to say, hey, I want to take my career in this way, or to go deeper on something that they're already doing every day.
And how about the architecture certification? Is that, you know, I took that one, and that seems to cover a lot of different topics, right, from infrastructure to development to solution architecture. I felt it gave me, allowed me to understand a lot of the kind of, you know, scenarios and whatnot that you would use to create an Azure solution. Is that something that we should recommend most people do, or again, you know, very targeted roles should only focus on that?
I think, you know, this is Doug. In my case, I get certified on every generation, so I just do it. And I feel it's quite beneficial, particularly over time. But what we're seeing all over the place is major universities or other educators unlocking their coursework. So you can audit courses, and you can get a lot more information and perhaps a lot more knowledge, where the certification is essentially proof that you know something. And depending on where you're at or where you work, that proof may be important, or as in my case, it's just something I've always had. But even if you go to Purdue.edu, they offer the whole catalog for free. You can audit the classes. But unless you come up with the cash, you can't get your tests, your exams graded, or a certificate. So maybe the certificate, the MCSC certificate is less important today, and maybe in 15 years, we're not so concerned about our bachelor's degree. But the most important thing is the information is there, and to internalize it and consume it, you know, as rapidly as you can.
Great. That's good. That's good. That's good. Good feedback there. So let me ask John, any kind of parting thoughts in terms of how, you know, about the certifications and anything you would like to share with our listeners before we wrap up over here?
I just really wanted to kind of hit again that, against Doug's point, there's so much information out there. It really is available. Whether you're studying for a certification, just looking to sharpen your skills, make sure that you're finding some way to consume it that's easy for you, whether that's hands-on, podcasts, watching videos. Definitely taking a few minutes a day, an hour a week, something like that, to sharpen the sword, to work on those skills is always going to pay off in the long run. And so certification or not, it's always been beneficial to me, and I'd encourage your listeners to do the same.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Well, thank you both for all those insights. And, you know, and if you have any links or any resources that you use yourself to prepare for exams that you can share with our listeners, send them over to me. We'll put them in along with the show notes so that folks have some things to get started with when they decide to they want to do these certifications. Great. All right. Thanks, guys. And appreciate you taking the time with us this afternoon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.